Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Densel, and this week I can officially tell you that there will be no program tomorrow. This time tomorrow, I hope to be on the road to Orlando, Florida, which from where I live is about an hour and 45 minutes, maybe a little less than that, depends on the traffic. And I have a disc golf tournament over there Saturday and Sunday, so I'm going over there a day early. I'm going to be staying at a hotel over there. Time to get out of town. The last time that I went out of town for disc golf tournament probably would have been in Orlando back Labor Day weekend of 2016. I certainly hope this tournament goes better than that one did. That one was ugly. Ugly. But it'll be nice to, I think, get out of town for tomorrow and Saturday. As long as my car is good. Did a little work on it yesterday. I have a little bit of a coolant leak that I put a little stop leak in there and filled it up. And I mean, that's something that's been going on with the car for a while, but we'll just see how it goes. I mean, the car is not worth that much anyway, so I think it'll be fine. Maybe you, if you remember, the last time I went to a tournament, I guess out at least where I had to drive a decent ways, which was up to Floral City. On the way home, I had a blowout on a tire. I'm still not sure if I hit something or there was just a flaw in the tire. It blew out, and I had to get a couple new tires. So things happen. People having car problems all the time. I think it'll be okay. I think I'll get over there. It'll be just fine. So I'll be over there starting tomorrow through Sunday evening. I saw this story. I mean, you talk about arrogance, and it has nothing to do with politics. We'll get to that in a second. Alanis Morissette was in court. She had a business manager who, and his name is Jonathan Todd Schwartz, who over a period of years had stolen some money from her to the tune of estimated at $7 million. And she wasn't the only well-known person that he did this to. He was the business manager for other singers and well-known people, and he had siphoned off some of their finances to, you know, finance that lifestyle to which he had become accustomed. And it sounds like he had a gambling problem, and he's going to be going away to jail for a while. And Alanis Morissette came in to, I don't know if it was testify, but to come in there and speak as to why he should be given a certain sentence, a certain prison term for what he did. And he stole a lot of money. That $7 million he stole from her was just kind of the tip of the iceberg. But in court, Alanis Morissette told the judge, that Jonathan Todd Schwartz stole her dreams. Those were the words that she used. Now, I'll admit that I think even Bill Gates wouldn't like losing $7 million. I don't think that one of those sheikhs in Saudi Arabia or the Sultan of Brunei or whoever else would enjoy losing $7 million, especially if it was stolen from them. I understand that. And I realize that this shouldn't have happened. That nobody who works for their money and gives it to somebody to invest, to handle, you know, should just stand there and take it if this person is going to steal the money. All right? But stole her dreams. There are probably about, I don't know, there's how many billion people are there in the world? 7 billion? There are probably like 6.9 billion people on the earth. That would leave, no, that's still short. That's still 100 million people. That can't be true. 6.999 billion people in the world who will never know what $7 million even looks like. Can't even imagine, even if it's $100 bills, can't even imagine what that amount of money looks like. And she's saying that this guy stole her dreams. Alanis, you're living a dream. Now, I realize you're not as popular as you were 20 years ago. I understand. And maybe that sucks for you. I don't know what's going on in your life right now. Okay? You know, you were very big in the 1990s. Of course, you played God in that one Kevin Smith movie. And, you know, I know things maybe aren't as good for you now, or you aren't as famous. Hopefully, the rest of the money that you had invested or went to the right places. But you have lived a dream. You have lived a dream compared to 6.999 billion people on this earth. Now, I know you don't have Paul McCartney money or Sting money or Michael Jackson money or Rolling Stone money. I know that, you know, I know, but you just weren't as famous as they are. You didn't have the longevity of a career that they did. You didn't have as many hits as they did, but you did pretty well for yourself. And I'm going to guess over those years in the 90s into the early 2000s that you made and got to keep, hopefully, a lot more than $7 million. If you only earned $7 million and this guy blew all of it, then you know what? You have bigger problems than just this guy. You toured the world. You know, you probably got some sponsorships, did some advertisements for things. You kind of kept your, you know, lifestyle fairly ordinary. You didn't go crazy Britney Spears. You didn't go crazy Madonna. You seem like a nice woman. Everything else, you know, hopefully you were doing that behind the scenes and took care of your money, even though $7 million of it was lost to this guy. He didn't steal your dreams. You have lived a dream compared to 6.99, compared to 99.999% of the people who have ever lived on this earth. You know, other people should be so fortunate that they even have $7 million to be stolen. You know, I mean, you know, these people that get to do these things, not just in these kinds of cases, but like in murder cases where they allow family members to come up and talk to the guy who killed their loved one, you know, and they really get to go off and everything. Those things are usually scripted. They go up there and people have a piece of paper and they read off of it. And, you know, you can prepare for something like this. So it's weird to me that Alanis Morissette, in preparation for doing this, those were the words that she would pick. Maybe she picked them because she's just arrogant. I realize she steals bad. I think that maybe the better words would have been, you know, I trusted this guy with some of my money. I'm very hurt that he damaged that trust. And he's hurt not just me, but a lot of other people. And because of that, and because he can't be trusted, he needs to be put in jail for a while to think about what he's done. That's all she needed to say. But to say he stole her dreams, that's crazy. She's lived a dream. Even though, once again, I know she hasn't been having as many hits as Britney Spears, probably hasn't made as much money as her or Beyonce or some of these other female artists. But she's probably made more than a lot of male artists who we know. You know, she's done decently well for herself. And I hope that she had money in other places. If she didn't, that's on her. You know, and all that fame and fortune that she had in the 1990s, if all she got out of it was $7 million, then she did something wrong. She did. You know, it's not like this guy has caused her to live in a trailer park somewhere or live on the street or move back in with her parents in the basement, and she's driving a 2001 Taurus that has a coolant leak and has 136,000 miles on it. I bet that's not the situation she is in. But she's standing there saying, he stole my dreams. He stole $7 million that you should feel fortunate just to have. So amazing. Amazing. But unfortunately, to get into the political side of this show, I'm not going to stray too far from that. I've heard about this Jimmy Kimmel monologue from a few days ago. I have not seen it. As soon as I heard Jimmy Kimmel monologue and his son has a birth defect and then he went into about healthcare in the United States, I said, I can't watch this. I can't listen to it because I know where he's going to go. And now that I've read a little bit of it, I was exactly right. It sounds to me like for the first part, he was doing okay, and then he strayed into the politics and everything. And I mean, we as conservatives, we still have not learned after all these. I think I have. I think, and I'm going to tell you what we as conservatives should do when we come up against this line of thinking, because, you know, it's hard to be the good guy or good woman when you feel like you need to oppose somebody who is up there, whether it's a famous person or not, talking about how, you know, their son or daughter was born with a disease, and then they believe that this is the reason that healthcare should be affordable to everybody, on and on and on. We as conservatives, there's no doubt, we are put in a tough position with that. And it's fair to say that being that we haven't perfected our response to something like that is one of the reasons that liberalism is still on the march today, first of all. And number two, the reason that so many people can easily fall into that kind of argument, even though they themselves don't consider themselves to be conservatives or be liberals. But unfortunately, we as conservatives, too many, although they believe in small government and everything, if they hear something like a Jimmy Kimmel speech or something, they automatically say, well, government needs to get involved. Unfortunately. Now, we do know that government does need to be involved in certain things, in protecting people's rights and national defense and the defense of our borders, things like that. But as we know, too many conservatives go a little too far when they ditch their logic for feelings. But this Jimmy Kimmel thing can be a very good learning tool for all of you. If you've ever felt kind of painted into a corner with a liberal when they start giving some speech such as this, whether it has to do with healthcare or with anything else, whether it has to do with the border, and don't you feel sorry for these people? You really don't want, you'd rather have this wall up and those people suffer in their own countries than being able to come to the United States. We know all of the arguments that have been made about abortion. Do you really want to penalize people who make a mistake just once, and then this girl has to live with this 9 months and morning sickness and all the hospital trips and this, and her body's never going to be the same? You really don't want to have a woman go through that, do you? I mean, we've all heard it. I mean, I'm 46 years old. I've heard it all. And, you know, in this particular case, I have to admit, the first thing that I thought of in reading what happened, I thought of Donald Trump. Because, like it or not, whether all you who voted for him like it or not, Donald Trump has kind of said the same thing and at times made the same point that Jimmy Kimmel made during his speech. What I can't figure out is why so many of you don't like what Jimmy Kimmel said, but don't mind what Donald Trump said. But they kind of said the same thing. And it comes down to this. They think that doctors and nurses are going to let people die. I realize that we have problems in this country in our healthcare system. I realize that we have an opioid addiction that can be blamed on some doctors taking advantage of a system, doing things underhandedly. trying to get some of their patients out of their offices as quickly as possible. I understand that. I continue to believe that that is a small percentage. In fact, I think if it was a large percentage, everybody in the United States would have an opioid addiction. We know that's not the case. It's bad. It's higher than it was 10 years ago. It's higher than it was 20 years ago. But it's not a majority of the population. Unfortunately, though, it is growing. And the people it affects, it does damage to their lives. And it does damage to their lives as much as illegal, you know, more, you know, drugs that are made for just poison. You have to remember, opioids were made for a reason. And now people are taking advantage of it and they're addicted. Cocaine, heroin, they exist for only one reason. That's to poison people. So, but it's still a small minority of doctors. And those doctors, if they are doing that, should be thrown in jail and never have their medical license. And the only way they should even ever see the inside of a clinic, a hospital, or anything is if they themselves are having problems. They should all go do something else with their lives. That is my attitude toward all of it, and I want you to know that. But to listen to Jimmy Kimmel, to listen to Donald Trump, and to listen to too many people over the years, you would believe that if government wasn't involved in healthcare, the doctors and nurses would be letting people die all the time simply because they think a bill wasn't going to be paid. And we know that's not the case. There is no case, no documented case anywhere where a doctor or nurse said, I'm not going to do this thing to this person who's in this bed right now because I don't think I'm going to get paid. Zero. Now, I know we have insurance company issues. You know, this whole pre-existing condition thing, which is a totally different situation. But if you're going to tell me that there are doctors and nurses who aren't doing things because they think the check is going to bounce, that's news to me. All right? That's news to me. And in fact, we know that with emergency rooms and every other, these quick care clinics and everything, you can go in there and basically get care within minutes. If you're, you know, if you've been shot, you've been stabbed, you got bit by a rattlesnake or whatever the case is, they don't ask you. They know that life is precious. They know that they need to do something right now or you're going to die, and they do it. They don't ask you what your insurance is first. They don't ask you if you're a millionaire and can pay for it first. Unfortunately, I think that that's how too many people look at healthcare in this country. Yes, when you go for your appointment and you sit in that lobby for a half hour, yes, they do ask you for your insurance. And yes, you do have to fill out a little bit of paperwork here and there. But if you get shot in a drive-by shooting and your friends roll you up to the emergency room, they're going to take care of you first, and then after that, they're not even going to ask you if you have health insurance. The next thing's going to be who shot you, and the police are going to be there. We'll get to the bill and what it costs and all of that stuff later and how we can all work this out. So when Jimmy Kimmel was up there talking about, I forget what the exact line is. I didn't write it down. Whatever he was saying about, you know, these, even if you, whatever he said. I would ask, see, this is what you should do if you ever get into a situation like this, arguing with somebody. If Jimmy Kimmel were here, I would say to him, so are you of the opinion that if government wasn't involved in healthcare, that as much as it is already, that doctors and nurses would have allowed your son to die? Is that your impression? Because if his answer is yes, if his answer is no, then I would say, then what's the big deal about? What was this whole thing? You had a great thing going. Then why even bring up that side of it? If you believe that if government was out of healthcare and these doctors and nurses would still take care of your son or any other son, somebody who's not as famous as you, what are you talking about? What point are you trying to make then? But if he were to answer yes, I would. If he were to say, yeah, I do think that, you know, if government's not involved, then, you know, then this would happen. And this is no different than when Donald Trump said, you know, government needs to be involved, because, you know, and Republicans aren't going to let people die in the streets. Well, no, Republicans aren't. But your inference is that doctors and nurses and MRI technicians and anesthesiologists and surgeons and cancer specialists and hospitals and all these other places are going to let people die in the streets. Now, why do you think that? Why do you think that? And see where I would go with Jimmy Kimmel if he said, well, yes, I do. I do think that if government wasn't there. I said, Jimmy, what if you were a doctor, would you let these kids die? If you were a doctor and you had somebody, other famous comedian's son came in with it, you know, was born with a heart defect, would you just sit there and let the kid die if government wasn't involved? And you had a suspicion that maybe the person couldn't pay or whatever the situation be, would you personally let that kid die? And of course he's going to say no. And then I said, then why do you think all these doctors and nurses would? What makes you think that you're somehow more compassionate than they are? That you're more willing to do the job than they are? What kind of arrogance is that? Why do you think this? Why do you think that you think that you have this TV show, very popular, you can get out and do a capable job, and you're going to come out here, whether the audience is full or it's only half full, you're going to do it no matter whether there's laughs or there's no laughs, you're going to do it whether the guests, you know, are entertaining or not, or whatever the case may be, but somehow you think when doctors and nurses show up for work that they're just going to sit around and, you know, take a look at people's savings accounts before they work on people. And you think that if you were in that position, you'd be different. How arrogant are you? See, this is how I would recommend you talk to any liberal when they start talking about how government gets involved, needs to get involved, because these people aren't doing the right thing. That if it wasn't for the government, these people, and you simply ask them, well, would you? You don't know any of these people. How do you know what they would do? And they'd say, well, I know human nature. Well, you're a human and you would. How do you know they wouldn't do it too? Why do you think so negatively of them? Why do you think that they would let people die? Why do you think that they would let children suffer? Why do you think that they determine everything according to whether somebody can pay or not? Because, and then I'd say, you know, Jimmy, I'm starting to get an idea here that the reason you think that. Could it be that you are projecting? You know, you don't work for free, right? If you're not getting paid, you don't step out on this stage, right? Right? You know, there are people who do things and don't expect to be paid. They expect maybe to be paid eventually. But they realize that once in a while they may have to do something for free because of an ethical or moral standard that they have in their life. Are you saying you don't have that in your life? Because I can tell you there are doctors and nurses, as a fact, who are working on patients every day who know that this person they're working on is never going to pay the bill. A poor person comes in, a homeless person gets hit by a car. They know they're never, the hospital they work for, whatever, is never going to get paid for this. Still, they work on that person. Still, try to save that person's life. You wouldn't come out on the stage unless you were paid, and you make them out to be the bad people. That's really weird, Jimmy. That's really weird. And this is how you should talk to liberals. You need them to get them to think about these things. You need to make it very... I know this is... I would not say that this is a personal attack. You need them to answer questions. You ask people questions so they can firm up their position and their attitude. And you allow them to paint themselves into a corner. That's how you do this. You know, the truth is that these people want everybody else to work for free. They want everything. They have this idea that doctors and nurses are bad people. They have an idea that military members are bad people. They have an idea that CEOs are bad people. That's what they think. You know, they have but then if you ask them, well, what if you were in that position? Suddenly, these people make themselves out to be angels. So what this was really about, Jimmy, is you just think that you're morally superior to these people. And that's why you think the government needs to go and keep an eye on these people, because you think they're underhanded. Even though if you had become a doctor and been working in that system, you wouldn't be doing what they're doing. So are you trying to tell me that just all the bad people in the United States just end up being doctors and nurses, and then you would be the good one? What exactly are you saying? The truth is that the reason that Jimmy Kimmel's son got worked on, and I hope that Jimmy Kimmel's son survives. I hope he lives to be 150 years old, Jimmy Kimmel's son. I hope he has a beautiful life. But it still comes back to one point. Doctors and nurses save people. Politicians and laws do not. And there is no amount of economics, no amount of government intrusion, no amount of dictatorship or communism or socialism or anything else that can change that. Eventually, somebody, no matter how many laws you write, eventually somebody has to cut somebody open and fix that heart valve. Somebody has to do it. The piece of paper that has all those words ordering somebody to do it can't do it. And all of those politicians who mostly have attorney's degrees can't do it. I realize that we have had some doctors in the Senate, in the House. I mean, we probably even have some there today. I know Rand Paul. It was an eye doctor or something like that. Bill Frist was a heart surgeon. We have various other men and probably women who have medical degrees of one type or another that have served in government. But most people who have served in government don't. And you know what they can do to help a small child who is born with a birth defect? You know what those politicians can do? Jack squat. If that kid was born in one of these politicians in the House of Reps, right there in the well, you know what all of them would be able to do? Nothing. And Jimmy Kimmel's son would have died. But here Jimmy Kimmel is saying that government and laws are the only fix. This is going to kill us. This is going to kill us. And one more point about Jimmy Kimmel. The reason that Jimmy Kimmel's son got that attention after he was born is not because Jimmy Kimmel is Jimmy Kimmel and that kid was the son of Jimmy Kimmel. That kid got that baby, got that attention because that baby was born and is human. That's why. That's why. And that were doctors and nurses who were there to do the job. That's why Jimmy Kimmel's son got the attention that he needed. And I hope the kid survives. I hope he suffers no ill effects from this. I hope. But Obamacare or anything else of government is only going to make this worse. Why? Because there are going to be less doctors and less nurses. And they're going to just become government employees. Government employees who show up at 8 in the morning and clock out at 5. And some kid is born with a defect at a quarter after. Well, maybe we'll get to it. Maybe we'll not. You know how I know that? Because I see what's going on at the VA for the last 15 years. With a bunch of administrators fixing the books and everything else. That's how I know. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital. Red State Talk Radio.
And we are back at America's Conservative Podcast. You know, what I was talking about there in the second half of the first part of this show today. This is something we as conservatives, we need to be very careful of that of ourselves. This human nature type of thing where we have to put ourselves on a pedestal among others that we think that we are better. See, I think this is where, you know, we talk about compassionate conservatism from the Bush years, and we talk over the years, big government conservatism. This is, I think, where that comes from. That we think that somehow we get in our minds that because our ideology is better, that we are better. That is not the case. The truth is that we as conservatives, we are humans just like liberals are. And we are prone to the same mistakes and flaws, seven deadly sins, just as easily as they are. And so when we start thinking in terms of, we got this $4 to $5 trillion budget. Do you know how much we could do for conservatism with that? That is our arrogance talking. That is, I think, what Friedrich Hayek would call the fatal conceit. Then the fatal conceit is that we believe we can do something better if somebody doesn't do a good job when it comes to government. That all it takes is a little more of government inclusion. It's not the government's the problem. Government just needs to be wielded in a different way. That is our human arrogance talking. That is a fatal conceit. When we don't realize that it is the government intrusion, period, that causes the problems. Whether it's from a standpoint of doing it for so-called conservatism or liberalism, it's still just as bad. And this is the reason that I think has been the problem, that you don't hear much. I mean, we talk, you know, a lot of conservatives out there talk a good game about smaller government. But as soon as you start talking about shrinking entitlements and shrinking Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare and all that stuff, no, you can't do that. Well, if you can't do that, then the government's not going to get that much smaller. It's not. Then you should just stop talking about it. Just stop talking. If you're not willing to say that government should get out of the wealth distribution business, whether it's from rich people to poor people or from young people to old people, then just stop talking, because that's where the problems lie. Especially with our national debt. And I think that over time it creates an entitlement mentality. It's not just an entitlement that, you know, exists in the form of a check. These people start getting an entitlement mentality. It causes a type of psychosis to the point where too many conservatives who call themselves conservatives, they think that taking from the rich and giving to the poor is wrong. You tell them, yes, taking from the young and giving to the old is wrong, but don't take away their Social Security. They paid into that, dang. It doesn't matter that we're $20 trillion in debt. Doesn't matter that they're collecting way more than they ever put into it. It's crazy. And as long as these things exist, if you want to know why we run deficits every year, it's because of that stuff. It's because of that stuff. So we as conservatives, we also have to be very careful about our own arrogance. And when we start thinking that, well, if we could just get in control of this $5 trillion budgeted government, we could run it right. No. We will run it right when we get it down to about a $2 trillion size of government or a $1 trillion size of government. You can't run it at $5 trillion when you can only collect $4 trillion in taxes. Can't do it. You can't do it and say you're running a conservative government when you're running deficits, the national debt is going up. You know, you're financing all of these things that shouldn't be financed. You're taking part in wealth distribution all over the place. And then you're calling it, well, hey, at least we as conservatives, we're running this thing. No, it's running you. So you have to be very careful of that. But I still say that those argument that, you know, how I would talk to Jimmy Kimmel would work. Let's move on to something else. Ann Coulter, talking about her way too much these days. Way too much. She has an article at her website, anncoulter.com, and I'm going to guess that this is the first time that I will have referenced her website in talking about her, I think. She is talking about how this budget deal that is going on right now that would finance the federal government through September is a huge mistake, and she's wah-wahing all over the place. And this could even tie into what I just said about conservatives, and it could tie into what I was saying about Jimmy Kimmel. She has a quote in there that says, we want, you know, because she's disgusted that there's no talk about defunding Planned Parenthood and there's no financing for the wall and everything else. And Ann Coulter says, we want the ruthless businessman we were promised. Does Ann Coulter realize that we weren't promised that? I'm trying to be nice about this. Does she realize that we'll get to the ruthless businessman part of it eventually before the end of this program, which is like, I got 16 more minutes. Does she realize that's not what we were promised? I mean, he said as many things that were promises about socialism and big government that he made as promises about conservative ideas and shrinking government. I mean, it was at least 50-50. In fact, I would say it was way more on the side of liberal ideas. We were promised liberal ideas. And just with some conservative ones thrown in doesn't surprise me, because I know that Donald Trump has been a liberal his whole life. So I don't know what we were promised. And that you believe, I would even say further, that Ann Coulter, if you believed his promises, then how stupid are you? Or did you just get into politics this year? Or last year, I guess. You're 50-some years old. You've been talking politics for 25 years. You've been a prominent author, commentator, speaker all over the United States, and you're talking to me about what a politician promised. Now, do you see how stupid that sentence is? She obviously does not have an editor. Obviously. So there's that. I don't know what's going on with it. I mean, she acted the same way with Mitt Romney back in 2012, getting all, I don't know. She acted the same way back then about Mitt Romney. He's not conservative, and she was just gaga for him. I don't get it. Does she need a father figure in her life? Does she, I hate to even think about that, but It's so, but I, you know, I think that my mind tends to go that way because the politics of all of this is so obvious, and she is so obviously wrong on the politics that she can't be as stupid to not see that, right? So I start thinking, well, then maybe this motivation of her getting on, you know, with getting along and going along with Mitt Romney and then going along with Donald Trump, maybe it comes from somewhere else in her psyche that has nothing to do with politics. I can't help but think that. I'm sorry. But let's get to this ruthless businessman part of it. If you've been listening, although I haven't brought it up recently, if you've been listening to me for a long time, you know that I'm no fan of businessmen. I am a fan of free trade. I am a fan of laissez-faire economics. I am a fan of borders being, you know, trade barriers being down. I'm in favor of a lot of things when it comes to economics and how dollars flow throughout the country and the world and what businesses can do and where they can go. I am not a fan of businessmen. I am not a fan of people. And see, I think this is, once again, I think that this is a flaw. If you want to, one more reason that I think conservatives have failed over the years is too much the fawning over of businessmen or businesswomen. Let's just call them business people. The truth is this, is that business people are colluders. They are monopolizers. Given a chance, they will work together to, you know, keep prices, you know, and I'm not saying this from a liberal point of view, but you have to remember something, that a lot of the bad business laws and laws against civil rights in this country came from business people. An example, how about all the Jim Crow laws that were in the South for so many years? Those came from business people. Those didn't, yeah. Because there were some business people who wanted to, you know, have restaurants and, you know, and other establishments where whites and blacks could mix no problem. But then there were other business people who were racist, who didn't. They were losing business because they only wanted to take care of white people. So they ended up getting enacted Jim Crow laws, which means separate beauty, you know, which means that black people couldn't go into these certain establishments to even everything out. And there are many examples of that throughout history. Granted, I like people who start their own businesses, and I respect that part of the human mentality. I do. I really do. But I've never been so crazy as to say, we need a businessman as president of the United States. No, we don't. No, we don't. What we need is a true conservative from anywhere. A businessman, a truck driver, a professor, an accountant, a baseball player, a deep sea diver. Doesn't matter to me. I don't care what their occupational background is. I care about what their ideologies is and how faithful they are to it. You know, and furthermore, I don't care if it's Donald Trump or whoever else. I do not want somebody that I would call ruthless as president of the United States. Ruthless businessman. I don't think that I would necessarily want that. And furthermore, I'm not even sure that's what Donald Trump is. You know, we know his business history. He's written enough books to tell us all about it. It's not like he's kept it a secret. He is the kind of guy who makes a contract with somebody, and when it's inconvenient for him, he just backs out. Is that the kind of ruthless that you wanted, Ann Coulter? That he was going to make a contract with you, and then when he figured that you aren't convenient for him anymore, he'd ditch you. Is that the kind of ruthless you mean? How about, you know what? I know what I want. You know, she says, we want the ruthless businessman we were promised. You know how I would write this? I want a principled conservative from any background to be president. That's what I would write. That's what I would write. The only word that I might include in there instead of ruthless would be hard ass. Somebody who has a set of principles, we all know what they are, and that person doesn't deviate from them. I can, in my life, I can respect anybody because I know where that person's coming from. And I know kind of what to expect and what not to expect and everything. Those are the easiest kinds of people to be around or to avoid. If you don't like their principles and what they stand for, you know, I just can't be around that person. Whereas those people who have those principles that they have all the time that you like, you can be around them all the time and be friends with them. It's those people in the middle, though, who will drive you nuts. And you just don't know what to think. You don't know if they're going to be smiling you one second and stabbing you in the back and another. I'll take those other extremes. Knowing people, they're being honest, and I don't like it, so I know to stay away from them. And then those people that I know are being genuine, and those are the types of people that I want to be around. It's everybody in the middle that I think that I can't stand, and I think that's the way most people are. Well, what we have with Donald Trump is one of those people in the middle. You know, Donald Trump is wishy-washy. I guess he's ruthless. If he's going to be ruthless, why can't he just be ruthless with liberals? But I think it's a bad idea, no matter what, to have somebody as president who can't keep his word. Whether it's about being liberal or conservative or anything else. I think that's a bad thing for everybody. Because when I start thinking we want the ruthless businessman we were promised, once again, just how I started this conversation, I don't think that that's what we were promised at all. I don't think so at all. But I would not want any president to be ruthless, really. Would you call Ronald Reagan ruthless? I don't think so. If Ronald Reagan had been truly ruthless, he would have made the Soviet Union suffer. Once the wall fell after he was president, but he would have made them suffer and really demoralize them and demonize them, even though he was winning. That's what ruthless people do. He would have gotten together with Gorbachev, and Ronald Reagan would have understood that things are going in America's direction. He'd come back to the United States and brag about it. That's what ruthless people do. You know, and he would have said, well, you know, we're going to have this new kindness between, you know what, your country and you, all these people are going to have to answer for what Stalin did and what Lenin did going back to the 20s and 30s and 40s, 50s, even though none of those people are around anymore, you know, kind of like, you know, those people who believe in reparations in the United States. If he was ruthless, that's what he would have done. Instead, the point was the United States and the Soviet Union, which eventually became Russia again, living in peace. That was the point. The reason that he went after Soviet Union is because he thought, once again, that it was an evil empire. It was a dangerous place. It was dangerous as long as it existed. And he wanted to get to a point where the Soviet Union wasn't a threat anymore to world peace. And nobody had to worry about the United States and the Soviet Union conducting nuclear war against each other, you know, where nobody was going to win. And he looked at everything that had gone on before him with each president going back to Harry Truman right up through Jimmy Carter and said, these guys did it wrong. We are appeasing these people. That's a mistake. We need to confront them, but only with the understanding that we do not want war. We want peace, but we are afraid the way you conduct things in the Soviet Union is dangerous to world peace and us getting along. And you, frankly, been being a little pushy in the last few years, going in Afghanistan, doing this, doing that. Yes, you were kind of behind the North Korean, helping the North Koreans in the Korean War. You were helping the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War. All that stuff's going to end now. And so we feel that we have to confront you now. We're not going to shoot any missiles into your country or anything. A ruthless person or a leader would have done things that are much more violent. Ronald Reagan didn't do that. He totally understood what he was doing. He understood the Soviet Union better than anybody in the world at that time, because he took an interest in it. You don't have to be, you know, this thing, whole thing about ruthless businessman, because when I think ruthless, you know what word usually comes after that? Not businessman. Ruthless dictator, which is almost, you know, do you even have to say ruthless? Because I think dictators are just generally ruthless. You don't even have to use that adjective. You know, it's like saying a purple plum. Well, yeah, well, I think generally all plums are purple. Well, all dictators are ruthless. But that's what I think of. Ruthless businessman, ruthless dictator. We don't need anybody that's ruthless. And that somebody like Ann Coulter would think that that's an okay word to write, and then she really admits that that was something that she was interested in, somebody who was ruthless, is once again, I think, showing how conservatives have gone wrong. You know, I think that, unfortunately, and I think this is what the reason that Donald Trump had success that he did, is too many people want a pound of flesh. It's no different than, you know, if you've been watching the hockey. The Capitals in Game 3 took some cheap shots against Sidney Crosby. He couldn't play last night. Well, the Penguins still won, but it could have been very easy. And it could easily, the Penguins could have gone out on the ice last night and said, you know what, we have to be ruthless. We have to go after those guys that hurt Sidney Crosby. We have to deliver a shot of our own. When really, the point is winning the game. It's not about injuring somebody to get revenge. The point is winning the games within the rules. Knowing that if you break the rules, your likeliness of winning diminishes. But, you know, unfortunately, I'm sure a lot of fans wanted them to do it. They wanted that pound of flesh. And when I hear Ann Coulter writing, we want the ruthless businessman we were promised, it sounds to me it's not good enough that government should happen to get smaller. You know, it's like she wants to take it out on liberals too. I just want you to know that's not me. I just want conservatism to win. I don't need any of these liberals to be, you know, carted out on the steps of the Capitol and say, you know what, we were wrong. All this stuff, man, you know, Nancy Pelosi standing there shaking her head. I just don't know what I was thinking. I'm a conservative now. I don't need any of that. Just like Ronald Reagan didn't need Gorbachev to go out there and, you know, in the United Nations or somewhere else or at the Kremlin or anything, stand somewhere and say, I'm really sorry for what the Soviet did over all these years. We were so stupid. You know, we don't need that. All we want is peace. We just want to get along. We want you to stop attacking other countries. And for us as conservatives, we just want to stop government getting bigger. We want to shrink it. We want the deficit to be less. We want the debt to be less. We want the budget to be less. We don't need anybody that's ruthless. That wants like some sort of revenge, you know, a revenge tale or anything like that. But I would say overall, if you were thinking he was going to keep promises, it was wrong. And businessmen are not the answer to our problems. I got to go. EdwardDensel.com. Follow me on Twitter, USA Podcast. Find the show when's it playing? I have no idea. It's on Red State Talk Radio. Just go there, .com, and find it. Find it on Podomatic and iTunes. I have a new episode of my other program, Unfound, coming out. You can find it at Podomatic and iTunes as well. The Twitter account is Unfound Podcast. I won't be here tomorrow. I gotta go. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.